FM4 ORF RT/podcast.
Well, it's 6 years now since the Austrian government decided to establish the Austrian Institute of Science and Technology here in Gugging, in the Kloster Neuburg. And I'm just approaching it. There's still a bit of scaffolding around, but it's pretty much all there. I'm here with Oliver Lehmann from the Institute. What's here on offer right now?
Excellent science. It's 3 years now since the science has started here at the Institute. And we have four clusters of science. That's computer science, neuroscience, evolutionary biology, and cell biology. We have 20 groups here working, and by now we have even 8 ERC grants, which are the most prestigious grants available in Europe.
Collectively, the Austrian taxpayer has pays millions every year for this institute. What do you think they get back in return?
They get back an institute with an internationally high visibility that can act as a lighthouse for Austrian science and can emphasize and pinpoint the excellence of Austrian science.
And I guess there's been a big challenge establishing yourself on the global scene. I mean, you can pump money into an institute, get the right facilities, get the right laboratories, but how do you make sure that the Austrian Institute of Science and Technology has a global great reputation?
You're absolutely right. You need all these essential components, but what you really need is excellent people, and that's what it all comes down to. It's people over fields, and it's excellent, dedicated, obviously highly intelligent people with an idea of science that really takes them further than where science is right now. And with these people, we're very glad to have these people. We're at about 160 scientists right now. That includes professors, postdocs, graduate students. We're on the right track.
It must seem a bit like an island, 160 scientists from 35 different countries, I believe. Give me some idea of the depth and breadth of the people you've attracted.
Well, obviously, we have people from Austria and Germany, but that's only one part. We have people literally from all over the world.
You've also got a lot of students applying from countries like Iran, Pakistan. Right. How easy is it to get them here with a visa, studying away and bringing their expertise to Austria?
One must say that Austria has improved, and it's not that difficult to actually get them here into Austria and have them apply at the Institute. Problems often occur in the countries itself. Just imagine many of these students don't actually have a passport and have to apply within their country for their passport before they actually can move out of the country, maybe just for a visit.
You've obviously got good funding from the Austrian government, but do you think that in the public opinion, the value of science for Austria is truly recognised?
I think it's improving. I think the public is gaining its understanding of how important science is.
Well, Oliver, I'll go into the building and meet some of these scientists from all these 35 different countries and find out exactly what they're doing in this Austrian Institute of Science and Technology.
We'll do that.
FM4 Reality Check.
You're listening to a Saturday Reality Check special on the IST, the Institute of Science and Technology in Gugging in Lower Austria. Eventually, there should be a scientific community of around 2,000 people working here at Austria's elite university. At the moment, there are just 160 scientists working on the campus of the former psychiatric hospital, but the Institute has attracted top names from the global scientific community. Dara Seekhaus, for example, is one of the newest arrivals. She's previously researched in such prestigious institutions as Stanford and the New York University Medical Center, but despite this impressive curriculum vitae, she says she's impressed with her new posting in Lower Austria.
The faculty, the colleagues that you have here, the students, the postdocs are all tremendously creative, smart, and interactive, and that for me makes the work that I'm going to do, I think, more successful and will make it more fun to do.
What is the value of your work? I believe it has something to do with fruit flies.
Yes, I use the fruit fly to try to understand how cells can move through barriers. And why this is important is because cells do this during cancer spreading and when immune cells chase down infections. So we're trying to understand this process of how cells can penetrate, can push their way through something that's trying to block their way using the fruit fly as a system to study this?
I'm not a scientist, so we always see it in terms of results. If money is spent on science, we want to see a cure for cancer. To what extent do you feel under pressure to find some useful end result of your studies?
You do it because you're excited about finding out something new. And for me, at least, I did pick an area which I thought could potentially have benefits because it motivates me and excites me. And I understand that I'm being funded by the taxpayers, and they would like to see something useful as a result. The thing that taxpayers may not know or understand completely is that basic research, it's not a linear process. We are trying to find things out. We hope that we will find something that's useful. We keep knocking on doors and hoping that we'll open one that will be in a room that's really exciting, but you have to knock on a lot of doors to find that room.
Do you think part of the problem is that the media underreports scientific achievements so much, and a lot of great breakthroughs are happening in science pretty much under the radar for the public?
I would say there are two issues. One is that science isn't covered as much as I think as a scientist it should be, because there is so much excitement, and I think conveying that to the public would let them participate more in the discovery process and the joy that occurs. But secondly, I think science journalism doesn't always report on how the scientific process works, on the amount of failure that is required to achieve success, on the amount of frustration that is required to achieve happiness. And so I think the public doesn't always understand the way in which science moves forward through sort of sideways and then finally finding the way directly ahead.
Both in the USA, but particularly here in Europe, we're entering the age of austerity. How important is it that scientific research budgets are kept intact?
When you're talking to a scientist, I'm a bit biased, but you know, if I contrast America with Austria right now, America is having severe problems with austerity, and hence they're cutting their NIH budget. And I have to say, a lot of European scientists and me, an American scientist, are going to Europe as a result. And I think that that will actually be not very good for the U.S. in the long run. I think you have to invest in the future if you want to have a good future, and science is a key aspect of doing that.
FM4, reality check.
I'm now here with Peter Jonas, who is a neuroscientist at the Austrian Institute of Science and Technology. The 1990s, you say, was designated as the decade of the brain, when we were meant to really get to grips with what was happening inside our heads. But is it fair to say in the year 2012, we now realize that we're still really at the beginning of trying to understand the brain?
Yeah, I think this is exactly right. We were all very excited and optimistic in the 90s that we would move rapidly, and we did so in many places. But we also had to learn that the brain is much more complicated than we previously thought. You can simply get an idea about complexity from the numbers, because if you count all cellular elements in the brain, all neurons in the brain, it's approximately 10 billion of cells. And each of these cells receives contacts and communication sites from approximately 10,000 other neurons.
When you're faced with such a complex field, does that make it a very exciting field to work in, or a totally overwhelming field to work in?
I mean, in some way, it can be depressing if you are confronted with such an enormous complexity and you don't really know where to start. But in other ways, and mostly, it's going to be a big challenge, because everywhere we go in modern brain research, there are new questions arising. So independently of whether we work on the molecular level, on the cellular level, on the systems level, there are so many questions. So the lack of knowledge really is a big chance for all neuroscientists, and it will take time. During the next 10 or 20 years, we will get further way towards the final goal, which is understanding basically at the exact level, probably cellular or molecular level, what is happening in these complex microcircuits.
Why is it proving so difficult to get to grips with the workings of the brain? What makes it so complex?
Yeah, so the complexity of the and the numbers of cells represent a big problem, because ideally you would like to record with high resolution from a larger number of cells, which is technically very challenging. Another problem is, of course, identification, because if you record from a neuron, you have to also specify which type of neuron you're recording. And there are sometimes many different subtypes, which make it very difficult to say exactly which neuron has which properties. And that's really a challenging task, mapping out the properties of all of these individual subtypes.
FM4 Reality Check.
I'm Chris Cummins, and you're listening to a Saturday Reality Check special on the IST, the Institute of Science and Technology in Gugging in Lower Austria. And in a few minutes' time, we're going to be hearing how at this billion-dollar institute, a small brown and white rat may be key to finding new solutions to terrible brain disorders such as Alzheimer's and epilepsy. Yeah, we'll be finding out how a furry rodent could hold the key to breakthroughs in medicine. Stay tuned as we go into one of Gugging's darkened laboratories.
FM4 Reality Check.
Well, I'm here now in one of the experiment chambers of the Austrian Institute of Science and Technology. I'm with Joe and Philip, and you're overseeing, Joe, an experiment here with a rat. There's a rather cute brown and white rat, and he's got what looks like a Christmas hat on his head. There's a big contraption on his head with two red lights attached by a wire to a ceiling. He's on a big circular sort of clock face, and he's kind of crawling around here with this big contraption on his head. What is going on, Joe?
Okay, so we want to understand what goes on in the brain while an animal learns and forms new memories. And so we've trained the guy to look for a specific place within the environment, which when he reaches there, a food pellet or a food reward will be delivered from above him. And hopefully once he learns the task well, he'll continually revisit this area, which shows that he remembers what's happening, what's going on, and then we'll be able to monitor what happens in his brain as he remembers this location.
And does this have an implication on the way our brains work?
Absolutely. So the hippocampus that we're studying, there's the same structure occurs in the human brain, and there are equivalent activities that have been recorded in the human brain. Now, obviously, we can't do exactly the same experiments with humans, although some have been done, but it's much more convenient to use a rat model.
It's partly more convenient, I suppose, because you have to drill into his brain. There are a lot of people who might think that's rather cruel.
Right. Of course, we monitor the suffering of the animal, and the surgery is performed under you know, normal veterinary procedures, and he has strong pain relief, as would be done with a human being. And the suffering has to be minimal, otherwise the animal would not be able to perform a task. So it's extremely important for us that suffering is kept to a minimum or removed entirely, because otherwise a stressed animal wouldn't remember anything.
Well, I have to say, I've seen you stroke your rat. I know you're not a cruel scientist. Yeah. I've seen you being very nice to your rat. But could your research help alleviate problems like dementia, Alzheimer's?
Right. Well, it's also epilepsy as well, because this region of the brain is extremely important for the generation of certain types of epilepsy. So there's widespread implications for what we do. But we are trying to understand the basic elements of how the brain works. So the step to medicine is perhaps longer than in certain groups, but without this basic understanding, you can't develop any kind of medicine. So the step between us and Alzheimer's may be slightly longer than, let's say, with epilepsy, but nevertheless, it's important work.
And finally, Joe, if my accent detection's right, you're from the UK. What attracted you to this Austrian Institute of Science and Technology? Why did you come here?
Well, it's extremely exciting. You know, there's a lot of great people that have moved here, and also, you know, the atmosphere of moving into a new centre, which is clearly very important in Austria, and I think internationally it's going to be extremely important. So it was a great opportunity for me.
FM4 Reality Check.